Welcome or welcome back to Horse for Whore. I'm Mariah.
And I'm Kayla.
And this week, it is my case again.
Yes. Woo! I love not doing research.
Yeah, you bitch. That's the worst part. I would edit all day, but fucking researching, I'm like, God.
I just don't have any time.
I know, right yeah. Now. So, yeah, so I should do it all because I have time. And I like this, so.
You graduated, so this is your reward.
Yeah, my reward, yeah. Okay.
Extra work.
I think that we should just get into it, and I'm not going to tell you the title up top, because I did something a little different, and I tried to be, like, creative, so okay.
Ooh, okay.
One early morning, Elizabeth Sayamba, also that could be the incorrect mispronunciation, so I'm very sorry, was sitting at her table enjoying a cup of coffee. Suddenly, her phone buzzed, and it was her older brother, Solomon. The message read, quote, "Answer me quickly because I don't have much time. Sister, end times is here and people are being crucified. Repent so that you are not left behind. Amen," end quote.
You know, if you had just left off the rest of that, just the first part, "I don't have time, answer me quickly," I would have been like, oh my God,
yeah,
what is happening? And then the last part, I was like, I'm just going to keep drinking my coffee.
Notably, Solomon and Elizabeth had a strained relationship due to some of his decisions. You see, in 2001, Solomon lived a relatively normal life. He was living in Nairobi, I think that's how it's pronounced. Nairobi, Kenya. Nairobi, right? That's how I've always heard it, yeah.
I believe so, unless we're just all wrong.
Yeah. Nairobi, Kenya, living a relatively normal life. He worked as a street vendor, selling small trinkets, and had a nice home with his wife and two young children. But suddenly something changed in Solomon. One day, he decided to abandon his work, abandon his home, and move his wife and two young children into the Shakahola forest in Kenya. Solomon, like others, fell into the grips of an evil, self-serving preacher named Paul McKenzie, who had lured them there with promises of salvation.
Always with the Pauls.
This is a story of the Malindi cult and the Shakahola forest massacre.
I like that intro. That's really nice. Yeah. Thanks. It's gripping.
All right. So going into it. Not much is actually known about Paul's early life. Again, this is all taking place in Kenya. And I have a map that I'll upload to the Instagram for listeners that they can watch also. There's conflicting reports on where he was born, when he was born. So I just went with whatever was the most popular. And so most sources say that he was born in Tennessee sometime in August 1972. So he is a dual citizen. He has citizenship in the U.S. and Kenya.
That's pretty cool.
But he's a monster, so we hate him. He spent his early childhood and adult life here in the U.S. in Tennessee, eventually graduating from the University of Tennessee. Oh my God, how many times can I say that word? With a degree in theology.
UTC.
UTC.
Isn't that, I'm pretty sure that one's the Nashville location because there's UTC Knoxville and UTC Chattanooga. And guess where I am?
In Missouri.
Or was.
Oh, I don't know.
was. Guess where I was.
I don't know.
Chattanooga.
Oh, cool.
UTC was the school that I was supposed to go to before they were like, "You're not a veteran. You can't get veterans benefits." And I was like, okay, I'll go somewhere else. Bye.
Asshole. Bye.
They were wrong, by the way. Anyway.
Also, I just like that name, Chattanooga. Chattanooga. Yeah, I don't know. It makes me happy.
Yeah, everyone from Chattanooga says it the way that I do, but other people or like the radio hosts say it in a weird way. And I can't even like recreate it.
Chattanooga.
It's like they do something weird with the T's. I don't know. I don't even
I know. Just go, I can't, just go listen I can't, to like, other listen. People. I can only say it how you say it. I'm like, how else do I... Chattanooga.
Yeah, people from Chattanooga say Chattanooga, and other people are like Chattanooga or something. I don't even know what it is. It's not exactly the same, but you should listen to it.
Okay, weird. Yeah, I will.
Okay.
All right, So at some point in the late 90s, Paul moved from the U.S. to Nairobi, where the majority of his family still lived and worked. From there, he worked as a taxi driver from about 1997 to 2002, during which he would do like those street sermons, you know, where you basically try to draw on a crowd with fiery sermons. And apparently he had a really raspy voice and persuasive reasoning, so he would always draw in like these really big crowds. Eventually, in 2002, he met a woman named Ruth Kahindi at a local church. The two immediately began a close friendship centered around their shared religious beliefs, with Ruth later stating, quote, "I saw potential in Paul as a preacher." And by the way, they were just friends. Paul was married at this time, but everything just calls her his first wife. I literally couldn't find anything about her name, where she was from, when they got married, none of it. Was she from the U.S.? Was she from Kenya? I don't know.
Wild. Dude, earlier when I coughed, it's because I took a drink of coffee and then I almost slightly inhaled it and I was like, oh, okay.
At the time, Ruth was living in Malindi, Kenya, hence the name, the Malindi cult, and was extremely ill. Quote, "I was so sick that I was bedridden. According to the doctors, no medicine could have cured me. I had ulcers and heart problems. At the time, I was staying with my daughter in Ukunda and had moved back to my husband's home in Malindi as I waited for my last days," end quote. But during her sickness, Ruth recalls having a dream in which she was urged to open her own church. So at the same time that she was sick and at the same time of her dream, Paul McKenzie had a falling out with the leader of the church that both him and Ruth attended. So Ruth saw this as a sign from above, decided to begin her own church, and asked Paul to be the pastor, to which he accepted. Originally, the church was called the House of the Lord, and they preached out of Ruth's house, but its congregants were urged to donate building materials to help build an official building. Surprisingly, the church expanded rapidly, and in 2003, Ruth and Paul officially opened the Good News International Ministries, which I'm going to call GNIM, or more commonly, the Good News International Church.
When was this opened?
2003.
Wow. Okay.
So for years, GNIM operated as a relatively normal church. Paul preached on the standard evangelical message of salvation through Christ and the Bible is the ultimate spiritual authority, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. But in 2008, Paul's preaching began to take a small turn.
Why?
Because he's a loony. But Ruth said that he started preaching things we did not agree with, telling the congregants not to take their children to school or go to the hospital when they were sick. I tried to talk him out of it, but unfortunately I did not succeed, end quote.
I want to know what happened to make him just start turning. Like, what?
Yeah. Well, it was around this time that his first wife died when he had the falling out with Ruth. So I don't know if that made him radicalize almost his first. But he goes on to marry at least two other women. So that doesn't, he doesn't seem to be that affected.
Well, yeah. But I wonder if it has anything to do with how she died.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know how she died.
Ugh. Interesting.
So watching Paul's sermons get more and more controversial as time went on, and having suspicions that he was stealing money from the church, Ruth decided to bring in a separate preacher to give a special sermon and, quote, "remind McKenzie of who he was and his pastoral journey," end quote.
Okay, like, that's fine. Ruth is the good guy here. But at the same time, like, that's just so, like, passive aggressive. Just come right out and say it. Hey, I think you're stealing. You're kind of being a little shit.
All due respect. And especially if they started it together, like, that money's her money too. Yeah. Well, so first of all, it should be no one's money if you're a church.
That money belongs to the church. Yeah. And if she suspects him of stealing, she should, you know, get evidence of that. But, like, bringing another pastor in to, quote, remind him of whatever is just passive aggressive to me. Just be like, yeah, I'm going to bring this other pastor in because you are a loony. I mean, probably
because
don't say that.
You're not doing the job. No.
probably be a little bit better than that, but, you know.
So during this sermon, Paul stood up, accused Ruth of witchcraft, which is very much a belief in Kenya, and basically trash-talked her entire family except for one of her daughters, a woman named Mary, who is deeply involved in the church, whatever, Mary.
Okay, so he's probably mad that she took the passive-aggressive route, so now he's just going to double down and trash her reputation.
Yeah, in the syrup, so in front of everyone in the church, he was like, okay, sir, you special guest, sit down. First and foremost, fuck you, Ruth. No.
That's a power move.
Ruth later stated, quote, I left the church to him. He was a little boy. Ooh, ouch. And I saw there was no need for me to argue with him. They continued with their teachings. It is sad that my daughter was part of it all. People quit their jobs. Parents stopped taking their children to school. Women were told to shave their heads and to marry within themselves. It was at this point that my daughter Mary and her husband closed their successful restaurant and joined McKinsey's church leadership, end quote.
What's the point of having the women shave their heads?
So it's to get rid of any kind of, like, beauty.
Oh,
because okay. What he's preaching...
We gotta have the control.
Cult 101, which is, like, you should not... Well, I kind of agree with this. Like, you shouldn't be... You shouldn't tie your identity to your things and how you
right.
look.
Right. However, this, what these cults do, it's a method of control. And
yes.
They preach it as, oh, you shouldn't be vain. You're getting rid of a sin. You're, like, more pure this way. But it's really just a method of control.
Yes. And it's more like, hey, you can't be trusted with all that stuff, so why don't you give it to me? I'll take care of it, and then I'm going to get you to God. Is
How about
essentially
no,
what he's saying.
Think so.
Yeah. No thanks. So, with Paul now fully in charge of GNIM, he was free to preach what he wanted, when he wanted, and no one was going to question it.
That's sad that so many people just, like, followed him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, a girl. We haven't even gotten there yet. An anonymous assistant pastor, who stayed anonymous because there's still a court case going on, joined the church after 2008 and stated, quote, in the beginning, the church was good. There were no issues. The sermons were normal. But from 2010, his end times messages began and it happened step by step, end quote.
It's really interesting that his sermon started to change in 2008 and then someone joined in 2008 thinking that was the baseline. So
yeah,
they
that
didn't
was
even
a good
realize,
one.
Yeah, they don't even realize like how far off the rails he went.
So a peanut seller named Titus Katana, who's going to keep reoccurring because he had some really good viewpoints on this, joined GNIM in 2015 and rose to deputy pastor. So he was basically like the second pastor to Paul McKinsey.
Okay.
Titus said that he had great admiration for McKinsey and his teachings, but that he, quote, changed because of his false prophecies. His main interest became making money, not preaching to the world, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
By 2017, Paul began telling his congregants not to see the doctors or send their children to school because they were being taught satanic worship. He set up his own unregistered for-profit school that his congregants were heavily pressured to send their children to because another pillar of this cult is like, hey, we don't want your kids to go out there because they're going to teach them the bad things. We here know what's true, what's right. Let us teach your children, which is like pretty scary.
Yeah, you should realize like if people are trying to control where you go to school and where you get your information, it's because there's information out there that they do not want you to have. They don't want you to have contact with other people who could pull you out of this fucking fever dream that you're in.
Exactly. Paul also claimed to have divine healing power and that he could communicate directly with God.
Well, that's just fancy.
And don't worry, Kayla, he could heal you. He could talk to God about your life for a small fee.
Oh, good. How about you don't?
Yeah.
Just keep my name out of your mouth. You know, whether you're talking to Jesus or not.
Titus later stated, quote, "He told me he had received a revelation from God about education and medicine being sinful. Everything bad started with this," end quote.
You know, that really tracks.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but as soon as... Let's pay attention, everyone. As soon as they start targeting your school publics or your public school system, they start telling you that medicine is bad, you should be on the lookout. I think it's really reflective.
That you should ban certain books, that you can't have certain content. Did you see what Florida just did?
That you can't say the words like critical race theory, like they only want you to study from one perspective. You should be a little scared.
They made it a law that if you work in any like capacity of a job and you come across like you have to work with someone whose lifestyle does not fit your religious beliefs or agree with your religious beliefs, that you can just refuse.
Oh my gosh. So basically you can face no adversity in your life. Like, let's not expose you to the real world where everyone is very different. Let's keep you in your own sheltered little world. That makes so much sense.
Sure does.
Could never be a problem.
Yeah, sure does.
I don't see isolation theory ever being a problem.
You can't say those words.
So around the same time, Paul set up TV Times, which was a gospel gospel channel that aired his increasingly fiery sermons, 24/7 all across Africa. He also started a YouTube channel, so basically anyone could listen to him.
Good. That's so good. This is not the same cult that has like the huge following on YouTube, right?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it has a follow. Wait, what's that cult?
I don't know. I'd have to look at it. I think this YouTube one that I'm thinking of is a white guy
Isn't
who thinks
woman?
That he's Jesus.
Oh my gosh! The only two I can think of are two women cults. I'm gonna look that cult up once we're done. Maybe that'll be what I do.
I think it's next time. I think there's not enough like content to cover that one because I think it's just so far fetched and out there that it's just a huge joke.
Oh,
like, I don't know that it would be enough to cover anything. I could be wrong. There could be tons of shit, but it's one that's active today, if I remember correctly. So,
oh my God, we could do a mini episode. Okay, taking notes. All right.
I'll try to figure out what it's called.
Yeah. Heck yeah. So that same year in 2017, Paul was arrested in October on 4 charges, which were promoting radicalization, denying children access to healthcare and education, and running an unauthorized school and television station. Which, like, okay, yes, but clearly nothing stops because we're still talking about him after this. According to reports, several children within the church died due to lack of healthcare, and in 2017, the Kenyan government forcibly removed 93 children from the church.
And they weren't shut down after that?
Well, Paul pleaded not guilty and was eventually acquitted of all the charges.
How?
Yeah, almost 100 children. In 2019, Paul was detained once again, but released on bail.
Oh, why? Why was he released?
Probably because he...
Well, okay, I mean,
there's some
guess,
reports
yeah.
that he's like, yeah, he's like a millionaire.
He has tons of money.
Because he stole it all from his congregants.
You can refuse bail, right? Like, I'm sure they would... This is in Kenya still, yeah?
Yeah,
like, could they not just refuse bail there?
I don't know. They should have, though.
True. 100 children. Who's the pastor in the U.S. who has the fucking channel that people spend tons of money to. Is it Billy Joel? It's not Billy Joel.
That's the wrong name. Billy Graham.
That's it.
It is definitely not Billy Joel.
Okay, I forgot the name, dude, okay? Okay. Yeah, that's so funny. I knew as soon as I said it, it wasn't it.
Billy Joel? No, no.
yeah, it's that guy. Isn't it? Is it Billy Graham?
Yeah. Well, it's like that family that have their TV evangelist.
No, it's Joel Osteen. No, wait. Is that the wrong name?
Joel Osteen?
Who the fuck is that? Who am I talking about? Okay, let me look up
Billy Graham. Yeah, American evangelist. He was a prominent evangelical Christian figure.
No, it's Joel Osteen that I'm thinking of.
Oh.
Yeah, he's a fucking quack also.
He's weird looking. He's had a lot of surgery done. I mean, Joel do what you Osteen? Can. Yeah.
Really? Osteen? Oh, it's Osteen.
Osteen.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah,
his skin looks too nice. Non-denominational Christianity. Charismatic Christianity. There's a fucking phrase.
Yeah, charismatic. I like that.
We should do a deep dive on that.
What is charismatic Christianity?
Fake.
Fun fact, we're not going to be charismatic. No.
Charismatic Christianity is cult. It is a synonym for cult.
Yeah. It feels akin to a cult. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, cult. Charismatic Christian cult. CCC, CCC. Whoa. Wow. Let's start a cult. No.
Start the paperwork. Let's go.
In 2019, Paul escalated his confrontation with the government by denouncing its identification of national, identification number. So basically a social security number. He was claiming that they were, quote, the mark of the beast and yet another sign of the approaching apocalypse.
We have heard that before.
Threatened with further prosecution, Paul stunned his followers by announcing that he was closing down the church, would no longer be preaching, was selling off its property, and moving into the Shakahola Forest.
Okay.
He also invited each of his followers to join him and purchase small plots of land that he, acquired through the coercion of his congregants, claiming that the area would be the new, quote, holy land.
So wait, let me just see if I understand. He decides he's not going to preach anymore. He sells off the church, right? So he probably pockets that money. Am I wrong?
No.
Uses that money to buy little plots of land in...
No.
What did he do with the money?
The land was taken from some of the congregants and given to him because he was the cult leader.
Okay.
But he was selling it back to the congregants for a low, low fee.
It was theirs.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. He's in charge.
And now they have to pay to get it back? What do you mean? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it was four congregants that he stole the land from, but nonetheless, he stole the land from congregants and then made money from it.
Hey, no offense. This might be insensitive, but those four are really not that smart.
Well, yeah, they were entrapped by this guy. They thought that he was taking them to Jesus.
He did. Okay.
Titus Catana, who again was the deputy preacher, said that he and his family bought about an acre of land during this time and followed Paul into the forest with many other congregants. The arrival of the COVID pandemic in Kenya in 2020 further increased the appeal of remote living, and for many of the followers, it vindicated his message that the world was coming to an end.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. I can definitely
see it was kind of scary. Like, at the beginning of the pandemic, I'm not gonna lie, it was freaky.
Oh yeah, I totally thought the world was gonna end.
Increasingly obsessed with the coming apocalypse, Paul issued new instructions in January 2023 to the nearly 1,000 congregants that had moved to the Shakahola Forest.
Good.
Notably, this, it's a commune, the commune, was set up within distinct areas, like little districts, that had biblical names, like Jericho and Jerusalem.
Okay.
Notably, the section that Paul lived in was called Galilee. I think that's how you say it. Galilee. Which is the area that Jesus lived in most of his life. Who's just, again, another dude, but whatever. So Paul has gone full-on cult leader.
Good. Good for him.
And he's equating himself to Jesus.
You know, you form a goal and you go for it. And that's what he's done.
So these new instructions, according to Titus, featured a methodical plan for mass suicide through starvation. You lost me.
I spend more than 5 hours not eating and my head hurts.
First of all, you lost me when you said let's all move into the forest. No.
If you said mass suicide through overeating.
Yes.
Sure, maybe. What are we eating?
All right, get your laughs out now because it's about to be sad.
Right, good.
So the first to perish were to be the children who, according to Paul, were to, quote, fast in the sun so they would die faster.
Wow, that is just so nice of you. That's so kind to get it over quicker.
And in March and April, it would be the turn of the women, followed by the men. So it would be children, women, men. Mm. Notably, Paul said that he had to stay alive and keep eating and be strong and healthy.
Obviously.
To lead his followers to meet Jesus.
Obviously, because you're all going to be dead and he's going to be alive. So how else would you meet Jesus, you know?
Don't worry. Once his work was done, he was also going to starve himself to death for the imminent end of the world on April 15th.
Oh, good for you. Why'd you decide that date?
Yeah, I'm like, okay, just call solid leader 101. Stop putting a date on the end times. This is how you drag it out. God, people.
Well, then that's how they revamp their message. They're like, actually, Jesus came back to me. We're going to do something else. But nobody else knows because it's a secret mission and we've all been summoned.
Yeah.
We could be cult leaders.
Titus was allegedly, appalled by the instructions and decided to leave the church and go to the police stating, quote, kids are dying in the forest. They never took any action until it was too late, end quote.
What action did they take? Because I feel like they didn't take any action at all. Unless they're talking action.
So this is in hindsight. It's hindsight, saying that the police didn't. But I will say that I said allegedly because I'm not sure how quickly, like, after the instructions, he went to the police. I'm not sure if he was like, yeah, I'll just hang around for a little bit. And then in February, he was like, oh, shit, like, I gotta go.
It's been a whole month, my dude.
Yeah.
Children have been starving themselves for a whole month.
Yeah. But in the following months after his, you know, instructions, rumors about happenings on the compound began to swirl in the neighboring communities. In mid-March, a local man told the authorities that his brother and wife had starved their child to death on the orders of Paul. Village elders in a nearby community that was also in the forest said that they notified authorities that starving children were escaping into the forest from as early as late 2022.
Wow. Okay.
Then, on April 13th, a man contacted the police stating his wife and daughter had left Nairobi to join a commune in the Shakahola Forest to, quote, meet Jesus, but they had not returned. Upon just minor investigating, the police discovered that Paul McKenzie was responsible and that he had, in fact, not stopped preaching, which, like, no surprise.
Yeah, I was about to say.
But there was nothing to prepare police for what was actually going on inside the now 800-acre community, which, like, that is fucking huge.
It's pretty fucking huge, yeah.
Upon entrance, the police immediately discovered frail, emaciated individuals in various states of health, including one person that was buried alive for 3 days.
The hell?
Additionally, hundreds of shallow graves and corpses in various state of decay were strewn about the property.
Just like as decoration?
Just like they weren't in the holes in the graves yet. They were just waiting, okay. Yeah. The first bodies recovered from the graves were mostly children. One grave is believed by police to contain the bodies of 5 family members, 3 children and their 2 parents, while one grave had 6 people inside and another contained 12 children. Local authorities quickly began requesting assistance from other jurisdictions to help with the efforts of searching because they believed that an unknown number of missing people were still hiding in the forest, fasting, so starving to death, and trying not to get caught. The authorities also reported that members of the commune who were still alive and hadn't yet started fasting were actively trying to hinder their efforts to find survivors.
Great.
On May 10th, the police recorded 133 deaths, with the majority being children, followed by women. While many of the victims had died by starvation, after autopsies, they also found evidence of, quote, other methods, including strangulation, suffocation, and beating.
Are you serious?
Yes. On May 26, Kenya's Interior Cabinet Secretary stated that Paul, quote, hired criminals armed with crude weapons to kill followers who changed their minds about fasting and wanted out, as well as those who took too long to die, end quote.
Oh my God, you're eating. Nobody else is. What do you mean you hired criminal? Are you? This guy sucks.
In May, the Red Cross reported that 410 individuals, which included 227 children, were still missing.
Okay.
That same month, the recovery efforts of other victims was stalled out due to the morgue running out of space to house the bodies and heavy rains.
I believe that.
On May 25th, local news outlets stated, quote, the exact number of people who perished in the massacre might never be known, following reports that there are instances where bodies were plunged into random, deep pits scattered in the expansive forest where the cult leader Paul McKenzie led an unknown number of his followers.
Okay, but why?
Because he's a loony. He just likes power. We could speculate wildly all day. Like, did they run out of money and he, you know, something didn't want to let everyone down? Yeah, yeah, genuinely, he's a messed up person. Yeah. So Paul McKenzie and 17 other cult members were arrested by authorities and charged with murder and terrorism-related offenses.
Good. Terrorism?
Yeah, so they made this a big deal. Which, as it fucking should. I don't know why I said it like that. Yeah, it's a huge deal. Unfortunately, this region of the world is not new to cult-related scandals. For example, in Uganda, at least 700 members from the Movement of the Restoration of the Ten Commandments of God burned to death. This was actually our very first podcast episode. So if cults interest you, we highly recommend going to listen because there's no time to explain.
It's our highest listened to episode.
Yeah.
People really like it or...
Or they hate listen, which like, hey, if you're hate listening, what's up, baby? So Edith Chamwama, a professor in religious studies at the University of Nairobi, stated, quote, a toxic cocktail of poverty, unemployment, poor education, lack of social support, and political instability have helped cults thrive in Kenya, where fake pastors use religion as a cover to carry out their illegal activities that harm society. Which, like, amen, sister, 100%, not just in your region, but fucking everywhere. So Elizabeth Soyamba, the woman from the beginning, her brother Solomon is believed to have perished on the compound with his body never being found. Solomon, according to Elizabeth, asked her to understand that he had no choice but to, quote, go through to the end. She stated, quote, he was happy because he thought he would be dying soon for Jesus. As for Paul McKenzie, he is a murderer.
Definitely.
Fortunately, Kenya's government has ruled that the Shakahola Forest would be converted into a national memorial. This site will ensure that Kenyans and the world do not forget what happened there. And that is the story of the Malindi Call and the Shakahola Forest Massacre.
Wow, thanks. Thank you so
much. I don't want to say I like this story, but it's like Jonestown, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. You're so interested in what happened, why.
Yeah, and at least he's being prosecuted.
Yeah, fuck this guy, yeah. But, okay, I will say one thing that I don't agree with is that some of the survivors were still attempting to fast in mm-hmm. the hospital, but they were charged with it because I guess suicide is considered illegal in Kenya. So they were like literally charged.
I don't know that I agree.
I don't. I feel like that's like further traumatizing them. But I don't know the ins and outs of their society. But also like,
I just don't agree. They were obviously brainwashed, you know, but at the same time. So I don't know that I'd charge them with, you know, harming themselves.
Yeah.
But if they had kids, definitely, and they allowed them to starve to death, charge them. I don't care if they were brainwashed. You're their parents, and you were supposed to protect them, and you just allowed some random-ass person named Paul to decide that they're going to go die. And if they didn't die fast enough, they were going to be murdered.
Yeah, you're culpable at that point. Absolutely. It's your job to protect your child no matter what, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, so sad. So, yeah, that's our case for this week. A nice little shorty cult.
Right. Hey, was the memorial's not ready yet, obviously, right?
It's not ready yet.
I'm interested to see what it looks like.
And Paul has not been released on bail. He is he's still in jail, thankfully.
It's probably because they charged him with terrorism.
Yeah. And this case was so big that, like, the president of Kenya spoke out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so he's definitely going to jail.
I really like Elizabeth in this.
Yeah.
Her brother is part of it, but she was, like, trying to stay super positive in the end, so that's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, she tried to find, like, one glimmer of hope, which you have to cling to something. You have to cling to something.
I can't imagine what she's feeling. Like, they never found her brother, so maybe they will soon.
But that's our case this week, and we'll be back in, what, 2 weeks for another one? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll be something good. I'm sure it will be. Mm-hmm. But we love you guys. Bye.
Bye.